Sad, immature.
Was there an Adam? Was there an Eve? Or did we evolve from what we conceived? Either way, we got what we needed when the sun shone down on the Garden of Eden.
We bit the apple and the garden was lost, and so we had to work to pay the cost. And so we went digging into the ground and started to burn many things we found. But
we sure did. We burned too many things we found. That's the great Dar Williams singing with Pete Seeger and David Burns, the Solartopia song. We are back for another hour of green power and wellness, and man, it is really something out there. Kavanaugh being grilled, and of course the Republicans hiding all his documents, including clearly lies he told the previous committees in Congress, and it, of course, his pretty clear indication that it's his intent to overturn Roe v. Wade and once again make a woman's right to choose no longer her right in this country. We are just really up against it now. I got to say, I do have from California some decent news, which is that Kevin DeLeon, the insurgent candidate for the Democratic U.S. Senate seat, currently held by the ancient Dianne Feinstein, is now within 8 points of her. So I'm going to predict, you heard it here, maybe not first, but you heard it here early, that Kevin DeLeon is going to beat Dianne Feinstein. I think that the polls are underreporting the leftist upheaval in this country. We've had a number of major upsets now in Democratic primaries, thank goodness, and we're going to talk about that more in the second part of the show. In particular, I love Jimmy Dore. I watched him. He's a commentator here in California. I have a show where, excuse me, he and his guests really ripped Bernie Sanders for having once been a beacon for third-party politics and now preaching that change has to come from within the Democratic Party. I'm going to put out the idea here, and we'll discuss it later as we go, that change in this country is going to have to come both from a third-party structure. We're going to have to sustain some kind of third-party structure to clarify what we really stand for as a social movement. And at the same time, I think that the Democratic Party has to be infiltrated and, wherever possible, taken over. I'm also going to predict, I am going out on a limb in this one, but I think there's a real possibility that Cynthia Nixon, I wish to God she'd change her last name, but Cynthia Nixon might beat Cuomo in New York. That would be absolutely wonderful, especially because, as we've talked, Cuomo perpetrated a $7.6 billion bailout for unbelievably dangerous nuclear power plants in upstate New York. And for that alone, he deserves life in prison. But I think she's going to do a lot better. I wish she had more time. I wish, like Kevin DeLeon, she had until November to run against Cuomo. Then I'd give a for sure that she'd win, but I think it's going to be much closer between Cynthia and Andrew than we think. We got two great guests with us now. We're going to have to talk. We're going to start. They're going to be with us the full hour. We're going to start with a major assault on voter rights through our electoral system. What else is new? And these guys have been with us before, but I keep having them back because there is just nobody better. John Brakey, you with us?
I certainly am, Harvey. Pleasure to be here.
Okay, John. Good. Where are you? Are you in Arizona right now?
Yep, I'm here until Monday. Then I'm off to Florida for over 2 weeks. We're having a forum on the 17th that we're getting ready to announce. In fact, the first announcement's on your show. We're going to have a live broadcast. We're flying people in all over from the country. And it's on the problems in Florida, Broward County. They have phone modems. There's no directive to save the ballot images. They don't have a procedures manual. It's typical Florida, and we're looking to bring some sunshine in there. So they do need more of that. And rough them up, and then maybe even sue them.
Well, do me a favor. While you're down there, see if you can find those hanging chads. They've been missing for, you know, a long, long time, and all those.
Well, we know the story on that one. It was a fraud. The hanging chad was designed to fail because they wanted to bring in the new DREs back in 2000, and that's what the whole plan was.
I want to introduce our other guest, Steve Rosenfeld. Steve's been with us many times. Steve wrote a brilliant article not long ago about what's going on inside the Democratic Party. We're going to talk about that in the second part of the show. We'll be joined by Susie Shannon, who is the only Bernie-crat on the Democratic National Committee. And she's a great one, but she's on a conference call till 2:30, and she'll join us then. Steve, you with us?
Yep, I'm here. Nice to be here. Thanks for inviting me.
All right, likewise. So you are in Northern California. You're about to be inundated with a major conference on climate change, global warming, Jerry Brown's swan song, I guess, before he vacates the governor's mansion for Gavin Newsom. I do want to raise one thing here before we proceed, which is of supreme importance, and I will be talking about this in future shows. Diablo Canyon, the two nuclear plants, nuclear reactors in San Luis Obispo, have been sort of set aside to continue to operate until 2024 and 2025, which I hope to God doesn't happen. And in the next year, in 19, Diablo Unit 1, which has been designated already as one of the most embrittled reactors in the United States, will go down for refueling. And when it does, we are going to demand, and we've already lost in court on this, so we're going to have to find new routes to do this, but we are going to demand that that reactor be tested for embrittlement. Now, embrittlement is a death sentence for a nuclear reactor. It means that the inner core has been so hammered by heat and radiation that it will shatter if cooler water is put on it, and that, of course, is problematic when you have a nuclear meltdown. And there are things called coupons or wafers, which were inserted into the Diablo core at construction. And these can be pulled out and examined to see if the core is embrittled. Now, PG&E, Pacific Gas and Electric, does not want to do this, but there is absolutely no reason not to do it. The whole process, because it's preset, only costs $200,000, which is chicken feed in the world of nuclear power. And so we are going to have to find a way. Steve, you're a fellow Californian and probably a PG&E ratepayer. We are going to have to find a way to get PG&E to be forced to do this embrittlement test in 2019. And I'm going to guarantee you that that thing is so embrittled they will not be able to reopen. So that's a project for us, and you'll hear more about that on this show. And Steve, I'm going to expect you to be writing about it up there in the Bay Area, okay?
Okay.
All right. You've been drafted. All right, let's move now. The New York Times yesterday, amidst all the coverage of this anonymous op-ed, God, I love that. This anonymous op-ed that came out of the Oval Office and said basically Donald Trump is a raving lunatic, should not be president of the United States and should have been removed a long time ago. I love that. I hope we find out. Of course, Jimmy Kimmel revealed who actually wrote it, which was Ivanka Trump. But nonetheless, you know, the front page of the Times is filled with this thing. They got a big scoop. I think it's great that came out. It's very important. We also have a book coming out by Woodward of Woodward and Bernstein about, I guess he interviewed all the people around Trump, and basically they say that he's a stark raving lunatic. Of course, you know, Mike Pence is not going to be any better. And I got to tell you that, you know, if we haven't learned our lesson about this. Just think, just compare Neil Gorsuch on the Supreme Court to Nancy Scalia. I'd rather have Scalia back, frankly. And now we got this fascist nutcase, Kavanaugh, who's right on the edge, I think. A couple more things. If these documents get released, it's going to be very interesting to see what happens to him. Well, let's talk now about North Carolina and voter suppression. Steve, I know you've done a lot of research on this. The Times' front-page story said that – well, why don't you tell us about this? The Justice Department is now demanding all the ballots from the 2016 election?
The Justice Department. The Justice Department has a new, maybe not so new, set of priorities around what they consider to be voting enforcement. And what's happening is this basically is repeating a lot of what was seen during George W. Bush, when the Justice Department kind of went crazy on this hunt for voter fraud. And you might remember that. I forget what it was, 6, 7, 8, or 9, you know, U.S. prosecutors
9
were fired and all that.
He got rid of 9 prosecutors.
Yeah, so what happens is, so this whole playbook, you know, this playbook of hunting for the Phantom Menace with a couple new twists is now basically unfolding in North Carolina. So I spoke to a guy today who was the former state election director, and there's a fellow who was a Trump-appointed prosecutor for, you know, half the state. The guy is a hardcore Republican partisan. He boasts on his White House resume of going after John Edwards and other stuff. Anyway, what they're doing is they are requesting basically almost every form of voting documentation going back to 2013. Now, some of this is completely crazy because federal law only requires you to hold on to ballots for 22 months, and they want ballots. They want ballots that probably don't even exist, but they want poll books. They want all kinds of other stuff, and it's in 44 counties, and because it's a quote-unquote investigation, that means that they're suggesting something is terribly wrong, but they won't tell you anything about what could be wrong. And, you know, it's likely to have a fairly chilling effect on voters. But what it mostly is going to do in the short run is basically screw up everything in terms of preparing for, you know, Election Day. And things in North Carolina were not exactly calm and pretty before this. And I can get into some of those specifics. You know, it's a state that has some of the most divisive partisan politics around voting, and this is a giant power play. And what they want the data for, now this is the new twist, they want to give it to ICE to look for voting by, non-citizen voting. Well, guess what, Harvey? There is no national citizenship database in the federal government. So they're asking ICE to look for voters who are suspect because they're probably not going to be verified on a database that does not exist. And then, you know, you can see where this whole thing goes. So, you know, so that's what's going on in North Carolina.
Unbelievable. John Brakey, you want to jump in?
I'm just fascinated what he's saying because he definitely knows a lot more than I about it. So let's keep him going because I agree with him. And I don't even know what the heck ICE is doing in there. Okay? I find that very strange. And I find it also that this is when they had the commission, what did they do? They tried to get all the voter databases from all over the country.
It's the same.
Because Steve, didn't that include maybe some parts of Social Security numbers?
Yeah, I mean, what you have here is, if you step back, is there are legal requirements to be an eligible voter. And what happens in a lot of these red states is they have added additional requirements beyond what is legally required to be a citizen, to be a legal resident, to be of age, to not be a convicted felon or found mentally incompetent by some, you know, county court or judicial or administrative law process. You know, you check all those boxes, you're supposed to be able to register and vote. Well, what happens is there have been new requirements that are not part of eligibility that have been added on, especially by these red states since the 2011 gerrymander. The biggest one is voter ID, where you have to have a specific state-issued form of plastic, usually with a photograph, and the people who most typically don't have them tend to be, you know, some fairly obvious Democratic-leaning cohorts. So you have students, you have some of the elderly, you have the poor, you know, and you have all these crazy examples, which you've heard a million times before. You can use a gun license in Texas, you can't use a college ID, you know, all this garbage. But anyway, there have been some other ways where that template, that whole, you know, create new, you know, new requirements to get a ballot have been imposed. And one of those, and this comes out of, you know, this COBAC, this Trump Election Integrity Commission, was pioneered in Kansas with the guy who was the vice chair, Chris Kobach. He's running for governor. He's a white supremacist. I'm not making this stuff up. I mean, he goes way, way back working for these law groups that try to deny tuition to non-citizen students at state universities and all this stuff, all this craziness. They want proof of citizenship, and they want it on paper. And the reason that this is such a potential big deal for the Republicans is because, as the Brennan Center has pointed out in their academic studies, 7 or 8% of the, you know, of registered voters don't have the paperwork. So, you know, in terms of peeling back the numbers, in terms of, you know, chipping away at what it takes to get to a popular vote majority, this is another one of those, you know, tools that they tend to use, a tactic. So what's going on is they have been pushing for the federal government to get involved in the voting process of validating or verifying whether you're a legitimate registered voter. And they've been using some databases that are just absolute garbage. Or they've been using partial Social Security numbers, literally the last four, not all nine, where you just end up generating incredible amounts of false positives or quote, suspects or non-verifiable registrations. It's all to create this phantom menace. And they did this in North Carolina just a couple of years ago. You know, when the state tried to pass its voter ID law, they went to this place, you know, they went to this operation run out of Kansas by this guy, Chris Kobach. They did some sloppy data mining where they only used the last four of a Social Security number. They found people with duplicate names or duplicate numbers. They said, oh, my God, there were 26,000 suspected voter registrations in the state. They made a whole lot of noise to try to get the legislature to pass. Again, you know, you need a required ID. Turns out, well, they passed that law, but it was thrown out in court. But now they're back to try to pass it again. Turns out there were only 8 or 10, you know, actual, you know, illegally, improperly registered. So this is the same garbage. And the thing is, they're going to ICE, saying ICE is going to check for citizenship when there is no national citizenship database.
God.
So, you know, it's like, oh, my God, we can't prove you are who you say you are. So, therefore, you're suspect. And, the question becomes then on election day, will people show up and will they have their registrations either challenged or find their names not on lists? And then what do they do about it? And you know, average people don't know about provisional ballots and all the backup procedures and you know, what they can do to, you know, defend their rights. So it's just – you know, it's creating a completely unnecessary mess.
Well, we know what it's about, though. We know that, and especially the choice of North Carolina was extremely significant. North Carolina is racially very divided, but they have a history now of a ferocious fascist assault on the whole electoral process in North Carolina. You got a right-wing...
It's not
Republican.
Just the election process. They're going after judges. They're going
right,
after
exactly.
Judicial elections, judicial appointments. It's crazy.
Well, it's fascism. I mean, there's no mystery of what's going on here. The Republican Party in North Carolina is probably in a slight minority if the state were to be voted. You know, it's not unlike Ohio. We see North Carolina as a southern state, but in fact, it's divided politically. And so the GOP, the Republican right wing, has gone after the judges. The gerrymandering now has been overturned by the courts. And there's a question of what districts are going to be used in North Carolina in this election, because the courts are seem to be saying that they have to draw up new congressional and I assume state legislative districts to hold this election.
It's too late. The League of Women Voters said, forget it. We won the suit. We won in court, but it's too late to change the maps without creating chaos. They literally said that. They said they got to go with what they've got because they ran out the clock. And so what you got is you've got an order from the Justice Department to turn up millions of pieces of paper and documents at the same time that they're trying to, because there's all this other litigation, you know, around, you know, there were lawsuits that were settled within the last week or two over whether or not if you're a judicial candidate, you have to list your party affiliation or not. So what that does is it holds up the design of the ballots. It holds up the printing of the ballots. It holds up the taking all of that stuff and distributing them to all the precincts and polling places, and then setting them up to do the logic and accuracy tests with the machines to make sure that the scans are properly and they're properly counted. I mean, they may be paper ballots, but they have to be properly read and scanned. It holds up sending out overseas ballots, you know, to people in the military and to people who are, you know, expatriates abroad. It holds up training and recruiting and training poll workers. It holds up sending up absentee ballots. This is, I mean, I'm being very polite and not trying to describe what this is. It's a complete cluster, you know.
Yeah. All right. We know that. We know the second part of that.
I mean, it affects this guy who I spoke to. North Carolina had some of the most progressive voting laws in the country before the Republicans took over with their gerrymander. It's not just that they imposed voter ID and they did the gerrymander. They got rid of early voting. They got rid of registering high school students before, you know, when they got a driver's license. They did all this crazy stuff. And this is what's going on there.
John Brakey, what kind of voting machines do they have in North Carolina? Do you know?
DREs, I believe. You know, I'd have to take a look, but the last time I know that they're old, and I believe most of it's all DREs, I think, and I'd have to be sure I go look. But I would say this, is that, you know, talking from the machine side, what we see is going on, and then, you know, and this thing with ICE is turning into papers, please. Are they the Gestapo now? Is that what they're trying to be? I mean, what is this coming down to? You know, I see Ohio, you know that. And I went in there, and it's 15 out of the 88 counties had digital. And the three counties that were destroying them were the largest counties of the state of people of color. And it really comes down to they're going to try to do everything they can to hold the House and the Senate. And it seems like they're distracting people in Carolina, I guess, because, you know, the early ballots, overseas ballots, have to be ready, I believe, what is it, Stephen, about 54 days before the election?
45.
That they have to get ready to send these things out? We're at 64 days now?
No, it's 45 days.
45 days, that's right. Okay. And so, you know, they're going to try targeting these things all the ways. I mean, we're going into Florida, we're finding that they have cellular phone modems built into their machines. Okay? You know, there is no state procedures manual. There is no hard carp rule saying you must preserve these ballot images. And destroying them is insanity because you're destroying the evidence that you just counted. What other government agency could you do that in that, I just audited your house and this is how much taxes you have, but I didn't save the proof. I destroyed it. So I can't show it to you.
I'm going to go out on a limb here, okay? In North Carolina, has really been the crucible of a lot of this stuff. In North Carolina, you have a Republican fascist juggernaut that wants to impeach the Supreme Court, for passing a judgment that they didn't like. They're trying to strip the governor of all his powers, right? And they are fighting now a gerrymandering ruling. The state was completely gerrymandered after the 2010 Koch coup, and so that the state, which is about roughly 50-50 Democrat-Republican, has an overwhelming supermajority in both houses of the legislature and in the congressional delegation. And now the Republicans, you know, it's not an accident they chose North Carolina. They've gone into this state, which is already in chaos, and created as much more chaos, as much more voter intimidation as they possibly can. Is that a fair assessment, Steve Rosenfeld, of what's going on here?
Yeah, it's really, it's not a new script. It's not a new script. The state has been, the state should be purple if things were fair and representative. And, you know, I mean, Harvey, I just see it as, you know, I call it the cornered rat, you know, theory of politics. You know, when you're in danger of losing power, you do everything. You lash out and you strike back. And, I mean, and you see it in the voting world, all these things that are portrayed as neutral technicalities are not neutral, and they're not just technicalities. And if you see it more than once, again and again and again, you know, here you go again.
Yeah, right. Well, I'm going to predict also that in the areas predominantly where there are people of color, there will be police.
Well, I actually asked about that, Harvey. This is really pretty weird and interesting and kind of strange. So it's 44 counties. They're mostly rural counties. They're mostly understaffed election offices. 40 of them, I was told about 40 of them voted for Trump as in 2016. Four of them were high population Democratic strongholds, but they are largely non-white, you know, lower income. You know the whole profile. It's the same,
yeah,
same lousy number, you know.
And so, the question now is, how many more states are they going to unroll this in the next few days?
Well, I don't know.
I mean, this is a way to create chaos, right?
Well, there are all kinds of ways to create chaos. And, you know, unfortunately, this is a really strange thing. You know, election officials, because of the reaction to Russian interference in 2016, which in the world of election machinery, as opposed to the world of political propaganda and the Internet, in the world of election administration, what the Russians got away with was almost next to nothing. I mean,
yeah,
they got inside of one state database and a voter registration database. They didn't change any of the files as far as anyone could tell. And in subsequent elections in that state, people's names weren't scrambled at the poll books. Unlike, for example, this past spring in primaries where 80,000 names were mislit, were not properly listed in Maryland, another 120 weren't properly listed in Los Angeles, 20,000, you know, in L.A. County, Los Angeles. So stuff like this happens, but because Russia was involved, the election officials in, you know, in the bigger states and the bigger counties have been doing all kinds of prep to prevent hacking, and we've never seen anything like it. I mean, people like John have been there yelling and screaming since, you know, 2004. You know, you too, that, you know, there are all these vulnerabilities, and now they're being taken seriously. So ironically, while all this craziness is happening around trying to mess up and induce chaos in this process by a hyper-partisan Justice Department, what do you have? You have a lot of state election offices that have actually been boosting their security programs. They've actually done it so much that they basically put this thing run by Chris Kobach in Kansas, if not out of business, on ice. Basically, literally, like they, it was because Illinois was hacked by the Russians, and Illinois was part of this network of 20-something states run out of Kansas where they try to do these with lousy data matching. That whole Kansas operation was flagged as being not cyber secure by the department, by DHS, and put it out of business so far in this cycle. Which I reported that, but no one believes me that it's true. But it is true. And so, uh-huh. so, 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 so it's, Harvey, I'm not making this up. So ironically, you have this incredibly weird dichotomy where people are actually paying attention to, you know, cybersecurity threats and hacking threats. At the same time that you have this, you know, this incredible chaos-inducing thing coming from the Justice Department, you know, in North Carolina, and who knows, maybe where else. But I, you know, no one can say for sure what they're going to do next. But that's it's really crazy.
Well, I think that the attack on North Carolina is very important. North Carolina is really a pivotal state. It's one of the five states that Hillary Clinton lost in the Electoral College, but carried in the exit polls. And you know, when we in Florida in 2000, we talk about Florida as being the pivotal state, although Al Gore could have won the election if he had carried his home state of Tennessee. In 2004, we talk about Ohio, and in 2016, we talk about Michigan, Wisconsin, North Carolina, Pennsylvania, and Florida. And North Carolina is incredibly, I mean, you know, the gerrymandering alone accounts for at least three or four congressional seats that could flip if it was not gerrymandering, probably more than that. Now this is where the Republican banshees are attacking the Supreme Court, which I don't think, I recall, as a historian, I don't think that's been done before. Maybe I've missed once or twice, but I have never read in my history books in the last 50 years of a party cabal in a state legislature attacking the Supreme Court. That's a new one.
Yeah, well, they did it in Pennsylvania after the Pennsylvania State Supreme Court redrew their congressional district. You know, that was a gerrymandering, a political gerrymandering decision, the only one in the country, you know, because it was based on the state constitution. And that's going to give the Democrats probably, you know, three or four, you know, pickups, you know, out of the 24 they need towards a majority. And, you know, the
Republican
legislature, they went after this, you know, they said this is the same garbage.
Yes. So the question now is, and John, I think you've got some background noise there, John, if you'll maybe go in a phone booth or something. The bottom line is that if the Republicans start doing this state by state, they will induce tremendous chaos into the electoral process, and I assume it's going to be to their benefit. I mean, this is meant to intimidate. Clearly, in addition to inducing chaos, it's meant to intimidate voters of color, citizens of color, against coming out to the polls. And we saw this, of course, in this horrendous, I believe it was in Texas, court case where a woman got out of jail, and I'm sure you're familiar with this, and Steve and John too, she was encouraged, and she went down to vote, and apparently she was allegedly ineligible to vote, and they gave her 5 years in prison.
Yeah, well,
woman,
yeah,
she's a mother. And then they added 10 months. They just added to her sentence. I mean, it's just a stand. You know, we know what's going on here. You know, I love your cornered rat allegory. That's exactly right. But not only are the Republicans cornered rats, but the corporate Democrats are being dumped into a corner. We just had another major upset in this time in Massachusetts. A black woman came off the Boston City Council and unseated a very secure and actually very progressive congressman, Michael Capuano. Is that how you pronounce it? This gives us hope for the black candidates for governor in Maryland, Georgia, and Florida. Gives us hope certainly for Kevin DeLeon in California. I mean, they're starting to talk now about whether the polls are undercounting progressives. And I don't know about that. I do want to clarify, before we move on from North Carolina, and Stevie did a really good job here of telling us what's going on there. John, I wonder if you could develop a national map that explains what kind of voting machines are where. It would be very helpful to know what the apparatus is in North Carolina.
Well, we sort of have that on our site right now, but that points to all the digital counties. And, of course, people could go to verified voting, and they can go to the verifier, and they can find out exactly what they're using in their county, and it has links to the equipment, and learn how to understand it. And that's something that we're in the process right now. I've learned how to use the green screens. We're creating videos. We're hoping to have a release on the 21st of this month, with how can you do what we do to take away their impunity to cheat by knowing the answers to the questions when you ask them. I mean, these people are so bad in some of these counties, you walk in and say, oh, you got a digital scanner. Gee, it creates images. Are you saving them? He says, no, why would I save them? I got the originals, you know?
Yeah, right.
And they say that they never turned it on. Well, you know, I look at them and say, well, then how does it work? It doesn't work unless it takes an image. It's craziness.
Ironically, if North Carolina had the kind of machines that you advocate, John Brakey, they could provide ICE with the information like overnight.
Actually, that's not true. Let me explain why this is so incredibly crazy.
Okay.
In North Carolina, the only names that are connected to ballots, because we're supposed to have secret ballots, right, are those but that are when people vote absentee or they turn in an absentee ballot in person. Everything else on election day, you know, is anonymous. There's no way to connect the vast majority of people voting there with ballots, even though they made a request for all the ballots going back to 2013. This is an example.
Well, that's a good thing, right?
And Steve's 100% right, unless you're in the state of Washington, okay? Bob Gates was running that system for a while, and they had barcodes on the ballot, and they refused to give them to you. And I was working with people in Washington State yesterday, and they were not allowed to take a camera in the room. They couldn't take a picture of the ballot, and because they're afraid they might be able to read the barcode and tell who voted. Which is craziness. And like Steve said, it belongs on the envelope only. And when it separates the vote by mail, then they're anonymous.
Yeah, so
that's
but
the way
we
it
want
be.
Anonymous voting. That's right.
Yeah.
It should be exactly right.
What you've got, there is you've got a make work demand by the Justice Department on an incredibly massive scale at the point when election officials are trying to do everything they can to, you know, have as efficient and hopefully accurate an election as possible. And
yeah,
know,
right.
It's unnecessary. It's completely a political fishing expedition.
Right.
You're going to find nothing.
Now, I have to say the good news in all this. Susie Shannon, have you joined us, by the way? Okay, Susie's not with us yet. The good news is that here we are. We've been doing this for decades, fighting for fair elections. And we're on the presumption that if we did have fair elections, the outcome would be good. In other words, you know, we've got all this fascist insanity with Donald Trump. And the bottom line and what we're working for is a fair vote count, because we think, I mean, number one, it's an existential reality. We want a fair vote count based on a principle. But on the other hand, we also know that with a fair vote count in places like North Carolina, the good guys win and the good women win.
Well,
I think. What do you think?
Well, it's not a...
Well, I'd say this quickly, is that in my town, Tucson, I was hoping a friend of mine who ran for Congress, very close to Bill Reisner, and he was the minority leader in the House, and the DCCC brought a woman in from out of town who used to be up in northern Arizona who lost her House seat, financed her with millions of dollars, okay, and then ran the advertising, and she won. Because they spent a lot of soap money on her, you know, selling a soap. And she's incompetent. She is a corporatist. She is not progressive, and there is a progressive demand. There, in my opinion, the DNC on the upper levels, the Democrats, are against progressives because I think they got a holy pact with the corporations. And if they start helping progressives, they're going to have their feed wagon cut off.
All right, well, let's start talking about that now. let's talk about the DNC, the Democratic National
Committee. D-triple-C, I should say. The D-triple-C is the worst one.
What we have is the corporate Democrats versus the social Democrats. That's a bit of an overstatement, but it's pretty clear that's what's going on here. And I just watched.
Yeah, and there's a battle between both sides, and they're doing everything they can to suppress us, to go ahead and not let our message get out. And that's what happened in our congressional race here.
In a lot of cases now, partly because Bernie Sanders decided to call himself a socialist, but he's not. I mean, there's a very clear definition of American socialism put out by Eugene V. Debs, who is a hero of Bernie Sanders's, and Sanders made a movie about him, and he actually read some of Debs' stuff. But Eugene V. Debs and the American Socialist Party very clearly called for the government to own the means of production, the banks, the big factories, the railroads, you know, the shipping lines, all the big social institutions, under monopoly institutions underscoring the industrial economy. The American Socialists wanted that to be owned by the government, and that's called the means of production. And Bernie Sanders very clearly does not support that. So he's not really a socialist. He's a social democrat, which is fine with me. And I just saw a big argument. Two guys on Jimmy Dore was one of them, and I like Jimmy Dore a lot, saying that Bernie has betrayed the faith because he's no longer working for a third party. He's trying to get the Democratic Party changed within. So, Steve Rosenfeld, you've written a lot about this. And, of course, we just had a major successful attack on the superdelegates. What are the prospects for social Democrats taking over the Democratic Party and unseating the corporate Democrats?
Well, the DNC, the Democratic National Committee, just held their summer meeting. And what they did was they voted on some reforms, a package of reforms that came out of the strife that was generated by the 2016 convention. And basically the strife surrounded, you know, the shabby treatment of the Sanders delegation by you know the Hillary delegation and people
right.
who have known the Clintons forever, including the party leadership. So what ended up happening was a so-called unity commission was created, and people from you know the Sanders campaign, including the campaign manager and others, you know, went in with a list of demands. One of the demands was that they did not want to have superdelegates, which superdelegates are unpledged delegates that make up about, well, they're about 1/6 of the total number of delegates, but you only need to get to, you know, 50% plus one. So there were about 30% of the votes that you need to get a nomination for president. So the superdelegates are basically the elected members of Congress, governors, state party leaders, and then a whole bunch of either volunteers who are like, you know, the super campaign activists, or they're high-powered lobbyists, like, you know, the head of the American Federation of Teachers and various labor unions and all that sort of stuff. So basically what happened was most of those folks were for Hillary. They were supposed to be unpledged, but they kept saying who they were, that they, you know, who they were for beforehand, before the convention. And, you know, that really really frustrated Bernie because he was winning. He got about 45 or 46, I forget, percent of the delegates that were awarded from primaries and caucuses. So the DNC, one of the rule changes before the DNC was to take away superdelegates' votes on the first ballot for nominating. And that passed. And that caused, you know, a great deal of consternation by people who felt that they were grassroots people in the party, but they weren't necessarily the Bernie-crat people, and they weren't, you know, the people in the skyboxes, you know, the corporate fat cats. But it still passed. And what that probably means is that it's not going to help someone like Joe Biden if he wants to run again. So it's hard to project forward, but it basically means that on the first ballot, let's say all these people who we think are running for governor get elected in, like, Florida and Georgia and elsewhere, they would automatically be superdelegates. Well, they wouldn't have a vote on the first ballot for the next 2020 Democratic presidential candidate. And there were some other reforms that passed, too, by the way, that were pretty important. They want to – caucuses are a complete unprofessional mess in most places where they actually happen. And, in fact, you know, Bernie probably won the Iowa caucuses, but they didn't release the raw numbers. And instead, they announced this arcane, delicate allocation math that nobody understood, but it gave Hillary like 2% more theoretical delegates, or two or three, like literally under 10 out of thousands, to the next stage in the process, so she got the headline. So that drove the Bernie people crazy, and they've been trying to professionalize the caucus process in the states that have them, even though the number of states that have them is actually shrinking. So they passed that, which allows people to have same-day registration. You show up, you can participate. And then they also said for primaries, they're encouraging states to basically change their state laws to allow same-day registration, which is a completely hard thing to do in states like New York. And, you know, I mean, 33 states are controlled by Republican legislatures. So, you know, it's a nice idea, but it's like a platform idea. It's wishful thinking. It's not reality. They don't control that process. Legislatures do. So that's what they did. And the thing about this is, you know, Harvey, your question is, how does it affect, you know, the climate in the party? Well, it empowers the progressives, to be sure. There's a lot of energy around progressives in these coming out of these primary victories that shows that's where the energy is. You know, it's more youthful in many respects than not. But it also discourages people who were really been, you know, these loyal Democrats that are not corporate fat cats. And I have friends who are that way, who have worked in the party for years. So I don't consider them to be un-grassroots. But they feel like they've been shut out. And they feel like, you know, the work that they do to get rewarded by being superdelegates has been basically now sort of taken away from them. And they pointed out that one woman said this to me. She's the vice chair of the Massachusetts Party. She said superdelegates should keep their super mouths shut. I thought that was really perfect, because if they don't say who they're going to vote for before they get to the convention, then they're supposed to be unpledged. And another person who was the head Democrat, the Democratic representative to the convention, a municipal official, he's the mayor of a California town, he said, don't take away our votes. I had hundreds more delegate slots for the progressives. You know, enlarge the party. Don't take – so the Democrats are taking away the vote of people, even though they're supposed to be the party of voting rights, instead of expanding their presidential electorate. So I don't know how that's going to work out, but that's kind of – you know, that's not how it's being spun. But, you know, the Berniecrats are making giant boasts of we've – like the revolution has begun. I'm not sure I totally believe that. They say that
people
are kept from voting.
Something's got to happen in the – something's got to happen in the Democratic Party. Susie Shannon, have you joined us? Okay, I guess she's not going to be with us. John Brakey, are you getting any cooperation at all from the Democratic Party on this crusade to give us a decent voting regimen?
Not really. In fact, I kind of gave up on them and very disappointed on that whole thing there, and because it seems that, well, in Pima County we had a pretty progressive movement. We even put a progressive in charge of the party for the state. He lasted 10 days, and they took all the money away, and he had to resign in order to get the party to flow again. You know what I'm saying? Because that's the problem, is where does the funding come from?
Yeah.
Wow.
John has a really good point there, because, you know, Harvey, you talk about these caucuses. The caucuses are a state-run thing. It's like, you know, you're running a golf club. You know, you have the rules. You allow people in. You set the membership and all that stuff. They have to pay for that themselves. You know, they don't get that money from the legislatures. So, you know, if people really wanted to make the higher national leadership of the DNC wanted to make, you know, the grassroots process more open and inclusive, they throw some money there, and they're not doing that.
Right. They don't want to do it. And you know, from I don't know if Nancy Pelosi represents your district, Steve, but she's doing a tremendous amount of damage. She's got this pay-go thing where, you know, she's saying if the Democrats take the House, they're still going to have to pay, show where the money's going to come from all social legislation. I mean, we didn't see the Republicans doing that when they cut the taxes of the rich people by $1.5 trillion. I mean, Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer, who's really been terrible on these judicial appointments. I mean, just rolling over left and right. I hope to God they don't roll over on Kavanaugh, which, you know, they could do any minute. We really have a moribund Democratic Party. And, we're between the rock and the hard place because the history of third parties in this country is not pretty. You know, the Democratic Party was formed in 1828, the Republican in 1856. We have, since 1856, every president of the United States has been a Democrat or a Republican. The highest third-party vote total we've gotten in recent years is from Ross Perot, for God's sakes. On the one hand, you want to have a third party that's vibrant and clear and radical. And on the other hand, they always get crushed by the Democrats.
Or blamed.
It's a nightmare.
You know, I voted for Jill Stein, and I've had people say to me, it's your fault that Trump is in there. I mean, that's insanity, okay? You know, what Maine's done with this ranked choice voting, people in Maine now are starting to vote for hope first and then the less of two evils, and that's a good thing.
Yeah.
Well, explain that, John. Tell us how that works.
Well, it's a pretty simple thing, is that you rank your choices. And let's say you have four candidates. You got the Democrat, the Republican, the Green, and the Libertarian. And really, a lot of times when ranked choice voting really works, the top vote getter, if he doesn't get to 50 plus one, could lose out because he's really appealed to the far right and he's left the center and the other part, where this guy in third place is making sense. He's appealing to everybody and everybody likes him, but they don't think he has a chance. So they may vote for him first or second or third, and the next thing you know, he's the one who wins. And it's a pretty simple process, and it's very easy to do the math on it, and it's really good when you have a good voting system that you can prove it. Because, you know, I watched very closely, and I know the Secretary of State of Maine. I've met with him, and in fact, I got a letter going off to him next week that we're preparing, and he was the one on that commission that really caused the commission to close down. And there are 100% in the state of Maine with ballot images. And so he's released the cast vote records and using that to prove the elections are real. You know, another great thing that we're hoping Maine will eventually do, Maryland is the model in this country right now. Me and Chris Sauter got involved in a couple of recounts there. First off, the whole state sends off their ballot images to Larry Moore of Clear Ballot, because he can run anybody's ballot image through his system and run a count. So they do an audit, and they had a couple of contests. And they brought in the candidates, and they said, hey, you guys have a close election here, okay? And these are your rights and what you can do. What we want to do right now before you make your decision is that here are two devices, and it has all the ballot images in your election. And you can take them back and you can review them, okay? And then let us know what you want to do. Isn't that something? Isn't that a transparent way to have an election? That we get to actually look at the ballots? Because we're in a system right now that's a catch-22. You cannot get at the original ballots unless you prove fraud first. And if you can't, how do you prove the fraud if you can't get at the ballots? That's a problem. Images solve that. And I think Steve and me and a lot of people know that if we want a democracy that is vibrant, if we want to go ahead and get more people to vote, because I believe a lot of people in this country believe what Mark Twain said over 100 years ago, when he said, if elections made a difference, they wouldn't let us do it. And, I call it the Mark Twain Party. And, you know, in that last presidential election of 2016, if not voting was a candidate, okay, they won by a landslide. They got 44% of the vote to Hillary's 27%, to Trump's 26%. You know what I'm saying? And because a lot of people, we've marginalized in voting. I mean, you know, it's like buying soap, or here is a ballot in the mail. They're closing down precincts. They're trying to, you know, defuse us because, you know, the basis of voting is your neighbors and you know them and you have a precinct. They're disappearing across this country. Not a good thing. If I was the man of power,
John,
I would bring them back, and I would make the presidential election and the federal elections all by themselves. I'd make sure that they're hand counted. I believe in state rights. Let the states compete against that.
Okay, John, Brakey, we're almost out of time. Steve Rosenfeld, will you identify yourself in your book and tell us how people can get a hold of you?
Yeah, okay.
And it's a great book, Steve. I read it. I really think that you really nailed out what's going on, and I thank you for that.
Okay, well, I used to write for Alternet. My stuff still appears on Alternet. Alternet was sold in the spring, so I write for a place called the Independent Media Institute. So the pieces are on Alternet. They're on Salon. They're on Truth Out. They're on Common Dreams. You know, there is a webpage under the name Voting Booth at the Independent Media Center. The book I wrote, Democracy Betrayed, came out in March, and what it does is it just showed the anti-democratic features of the 2016 election. You know, it showed what the Democrats did to Bernie, it showed what the Republicans did to the Democrats, it showed how we didn't have a recount that could be trusted, and it talked about, you know, going up to basically almost a little less than a year ago.
And how do people get a hold of it? How do people get this book?
Oh, it's online. You know, it's in stores. It's called Democracy Betrayed, How Superdelegates, Redistricting, Party Insiders, and the Electoral College.
And Susie, well, great. John, thank you. Susie Shannon, you joined us late. I'll get to you next week, please. Give me a call. John Brakey, thanks so much. How do people get you?
You can hold me through johnbrakey@gmail.com, and my site is auditelectionsusa.org. Thank you, Harvey.
Thank you, guys, in New York. Susie Shannon, we'll get to you next week. And in Solartopia, let's get a democracy in this country, people. What a concept. See you next week.
And the garden was lost, and so we had to work.